Well, welcome back, everyone.
Yay,
Thanks for
welcome
having
back.
us.
Hello.
And happy Easter.
He is risen.
Well, he is at the box office.
Sort of.
Yes, well, we're back for another season of the podcast. Hooray!
Yay.
I'm Nathaniel with the Film Experience, and I'm here with Katie Rich from Vanity Fair,
Hello.
Joe Reed from The Wire,
Hi.
and Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
Hello.
So, should we jump right in
Let's.
to the Ark? We're going to Noah.
Single or 2x2 file, so.
Well, there's four of us, so that works out.
Yes,
Yeah.
perfect.
Although there's only one girl.
Yeah, I can be the snake that Ray Winston eats. An outlier.
And then we can be subject to that incredibly convenient incense that makes you fall asleep until the plot doesn't need you anymore.
That sounds fantastic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If
That
every
would really
flight
just
could
like.
be like that, I would be so happy.
Oh, it would be great. Just
I don't
wake up
want
at
to
your
deal with.
destination.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with CGI animals for a while. I'm just gonna, you know what? They just slept.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
I feel like, what could you, I mean, this is a question for another podcast. What movie would be better served by having that incense applied to some other character who is inconvenient to the plot, who you want to get rid of until later
Oh.
on?
The
Oh, good.
possibilities,
Yeah.
man.
No, yeah.
Can we narrow it down?
I'm going to think about this and maybe get back to you next week.
Yeah.
Well, that's a challenge to you, readers.
Yeah, please
Which
get after
character
it.
would you like the magic incense applied to?
Yeah.
They can wait out the whole movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we
Even if they're kind of crucial to the movie.
Well, the animals are actually dispensed with fairly quickly, plot-wise.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And because it's such hilariously a children's story, even though it's so grim, usually it's all about the animals.
Yeah.
So, what did you guys make of Darren's vision?
Well, like, I can totally see why he doesn't, like, I mean, even beyond how dark he's decided to take the whole thing, like, I can see how it would be hard to bounce back from, like, Russell Crowe standing next to two ibexes and two flamingos and not think we were watching Dr. Dolittle or something. So,
Right.
it's a little hard to pull off. But, I don't know, some animals, and maybe some animals that don't look totally shitty. Like, I feel like we got snakes and locusts, and I got jacked after that. And one of my friends I saw it with was like, I thought we were going to see cool pre-flood animals, like
Right.
that weird-ass armadillo pangolin dog thing that we met
Yeah.
at the beginning. But then
Yeah, that thing
everything
was
else
so
was just,
cool.
yeah. Everything else was just like a snake, like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't, yeah, and couldn't he have eaten, like, Ray Winston, couldn't he have eaten something really, like, yeah, like, something that, ooh, what a cool animal. Oh, it's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't make it on the ark, sorry.
Yeah.
So sad, fish cat.
Yeah, too bad for you, Liger.
There's something about the fact that Aronofsky just basically dispenses with the most famous thing of the story that is part of what I admire about this movie, which I don't totally love, but I admire the further away I get from it, which is just that he's like, I'm going to tell my version of this, and it's going to be weird and dark, and there's going to be magic sparking rocks that grow in the earth. I can't remember what they're called. There's a specific name for them.
Were they the watchers? The
No, the
No.
things that they make fire with,
Stonewalker.
that they like,
Oh,
bazoar,
right.
yeah, that stuff. And the
Well,
Watchers, too, the whole other problem. Or,
AKA unobtainium.
yes.
Right.
Every director deserves their unobtainium. And the fact that Noah is somehow a hit and also is so weird and crazy, and they bent over backwards to sell it to religious audiences, and it worked. I just really admire the balls it took to make something like this, even though it's not entirely a success.
They bent over backwards to sell it to religious audiences and included a fairly significant chunk of, like, here's how you can sort of incorporate evolution into your vision of a
Of
creator god.
Genesis, yeah.
Yeah. Which
Which
I
is kind
thought
of
was really
cool.
cool, too, yeah. The movie certainly gave me more to think about than I thought it would. I thought it was just, it was. I guess I don't know why I was expecting such awful things because I do love Aronofsky, but I think it's that, like, Russell Crowe, Jennifer Connelly, Anthony Hopkins combination really just flips a switch in my brain and just sort of like, ah, it's going to be so bad. But I don't know. I thought it was he took it to places in that second half that I was not expecting it to go. And while it sort of mostly just sort of like set the table for a lot of melodrama, it was also not as neat and tidy in its conclusions as I was expecting it to be, which was good.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nick and I were talking about this. We did cheat a little bit and talk a little bit about Noah before the podcast.
Cheaters.
But we both thought that the second act was problematic because there was already so much going on, and then you add like the extra passenger in the arc.
Right.
So, Nick, do you want to fill them in on what you were saying about that?
I just never... I don't know that the movie like profits much from that entire Ray Winstone character.
I agree.
It is Ray Winstone, right? I keep forgetting if it's him or Brian Cox or whichever one of them.
Nick Nolte is the rock monster, not a human. That's difficult to remember. As in most things.
Calling the rock lobsters, which I love. But, yeah, I mean, it just seems like you already have so much going on that he has decided to foreground in interesting ways in terms of the, like, horrifying capacities of Noah and whatever malevolence or not we're supposed to, like, you know, apply to God, that then having a guy who literally has to... I think I really fell out at the moment when he was trying to... Ray Winstone was sneaking onto the Ark, and he had to walk up the scaffolding for, like, four cross-cut scenes and just go, "Nah!" Like, just to remind us that I am evil! I'm not on this Ark! Like, and it just kind of kept bogging down the movie from, like, all the cool conceptual stuff it was at least trying to go for, which I admired, too, even though I might have liked the movie a little bit less. But
yeah, his character was kind of a glaring weak point. I liked how...
Doesn't that feel like kind of a like sop to mainstream audiences, though, so you could have action scenes?
Right, conflict.
Kind of, but then would you really describe them as... Except for, like, the giant Lord of the Ringsy like, raid on the Ark, which seemed... I don't know. The presence of that army is around for a long time before, like, really much happens with it, and even less that's clear.
Right.
Yeah, the fact that they felt like they need the Ray Winstone character, it does seem like some kind of weird sense of insecurity because it's so much about interior conflicts. And even when you got him on the Ark, can I spoil it? Do we need to do spoiler warnings for Noah? I mean, they survived the flood.
No, it's been out for a while.
So when you have him on the Ark,
it's been out for even longer. So
exactly. Yeah. When you have him on the Ark and you basically got him kind of tempting Logan Lerman's character to go to the dark side and want to kill his father. But everyone wants to kill Noah at that point. And you don't need Ray Winston there to kind of be the, you know, the snake hissing in his ear. So there's this really, this sense that they needed more internal conflicts, which is what Aronofsky's movies are so good at.
Yeah.
And that they had to externalize it, and Ray Winston feels really, I mean, maybe he was going for something else and he didn't like lose his gumption with doing internal conflicts, but it didn't come across that way.
Yeah.
Well, and far be it from me to bring logistical quibbles into a story like this. But like, I think when you get a story that introduces as big of a sort of like drops a bomb the way it does in the middle of this movie, where Russell Crowe makes the decree to everybody that he's going to kill this baby to, you know, halt the whatever line of man. And then you flash forward like 8 months basically. And it's just like, so in that ensuing time, nobody did anything about this. Like, it's sort of, this movie continually sort of leads you up to the doorstep and like forces you to consider things that the movie is just like, well, it didn't happen. Like, in all those 8 months, nobody decided to maybe try and kill Noah. Like, that seems like a thing. Like, because they had already established that thing with the Jennifer Connelly scene where he's like, you would do anything and kill anyone to protect your children. And she's like, yes. And it's like, okay, well, now there's this clear and present threat against your children and nothing. And I felt like also it does that with, and this is kind of gross, but whatever, like, the way it leads it up to at the end was just like, well, and humanity will continue, dot, dot, dot. And that dot, dot, dot is like,
incest.
Once these nieces have sex with their uncle.
Yeah, because there's even about, like, he gave us two girls, which is exactly what we need.
Exactly.
Like, wow. Yeah. I mean, like, the whole plot about just kind of
and
the fate
no
of those babies seems like a giant, like, kind of MacGuffin away from the scenario that we're actually in, which is trying to figure out how we procreate from among four of us. But,
or like, Ham walks out and, like, populates Asia. Like, how?
Well, but also, like, if we're gonna worry about incest, like, we're all incestuous because Adam and Eve, hello?
Right.
If you're gonna take a Bible story.
That's the thing, is, like, it's unavoidable, but it's still, like, don't walk us up to that doorstep then. And, like, basically force us to, like, connect those dots.
Well, and they feel like the gross ones for making that assumption.
Yeah.
Right, and then the also weird
thing... You are the gross ones, Bible writers.
The also weird part about that is that Ham, am I getting the names right? I forget my Bible stories.
Logan Lerman is Ham.
Yeah, so Ham...
You are, because all I could think of was Angie Jordan every time...
Ham! Why is that... That meme has to be out there. Did not enough people see Noah and also Love 30 Rock?
I know. It has to. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm surprised my audience didn't say Ham at the same time.
I know. So good.
So, what was I saying? Oh, so Ham actually leaves, so he's not impregnating his niece.
Right.
Well, here's my fan wank, though.
So now they have an extra girl, so they may as well just kill her.
That's how
but my little pet theory that only exists in my head is, like, he left to, like, go walk around for a good, like, 15 years so that when he came back and had to impregnate his nieces, he wouldn't have, like, grown up with them as, like, children.
Oh, that's smart, actually.
See how easy it is?
To, like, I love how you're rationalizing the plot, Joe.
I'm saying, but, like, I was given no choice. I was basically given no choice.
So, since you guys are more plugged in, like, Has anything kind of been said about how much Aronofsky feels like there was heavy studio intervention or not on his ideas, or how much we are to take this? I mean, it's probably too early for him to be particularly candid about this, but...
I mean, I don't know how candid this is, but they did a big New Yorker. There's a big Tat Friend piece in the New Yorker about this movie.
Oh, okay.
And he basically said they had it, they tested it with audiences, his version. Audiences hated it. They kept tweaking it, kept tweaking it. Audiences hated those versions more, so they went back to Aronofsky's version.
Okay.
So I believe it's pretty close to what he actually wanted it to be. And then that version of the story might change later, but that's what they're saying for now.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause there are just so many things, like the rock lobsters and the big siege on the Ark and the Anthony Hopkins stuff. Like, it was just, there was a lot that felt like what an action movie version of this concept would have to look like to kind of pass it into the noses of whatever studio this is. I forget.
Paramount.
Yeah.
Although you'll notice, though, that the rock lobsters are not in the marketing at all because they were so terrified of Bible people being against it. So if that was a studio thing, it really backfired.
Well, but
backfired, which also, is imaginable, yeah.
Also, can we just have, like, fear of religious audience do every trailer so I could be surprised in the movie theater?
Yeah.
Because I have to tell you, that was... I loved, like, that I didn't know what I was getting.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare now, and, like, I was just like, what the hell is going on? And I actually love that feeling.
Yeah.
Especially because even though there were, like, Lord of the Rings Middle-earthy things about the sequences, because of it made you think of the Ents.
I was going to say, because of Treebeard? Yes,
yeah. Exactly. So, but even that, I thought it was still, even within admitting that, it was still sort of its own unique vision. Like, the Watchers falling to Earth and becoming mired in Earth was fascinating scene, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, if you're going to go there, you chose the right way to visualize it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that they had never sort of recovered from that, but they were still, like, fearsome, and I thought Iceland looked amazing. So there were a lot of things visually I liked about it.
Yeah.
It just, I think, from this conversation, it sounds like what all of us had issues with were this was the script.
Yeah. It's the way that the script kind of puts plot in there. I mean, Aronofsky, I don't think any of us would say plot has really been his strong suit.
Right.
You know, his movies tend to be based with character studies, and that is the best parts of Noah are the parts that are a character study, and not Ham trying to get a wife before the flood comes.
Right.
Can we talk about Jennifer Connelly briefly?
Yeah.
Sorry, Nick.
Wait, you want to talk about an actress again?
This movie really made me kind of focus on the fact that, like, I don't even think she's a good actress anymore, but I may be more fascinated by her than I've ever been in my life watching her in this movie. Because there's
that?
Undeniably something about her that makes me want her to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, makes me unwilling to, like, cast her aside.
Is it the fact that she's so freaking beautiful?
Well, that, but, like, I think part of it is just her face is just sort of, like, there's so much, like, that could possibly be read on this face, and it's just like, and then she just walks you up to the door of, like, this great thing, and then it's just like, oh, that's what she did. Like, like, she's really, really getting to a really interesting place, and then she just starts hyperventilating and snotting all over the place, and it's just like, oh, like, that was almost something really good.
I felt a little bad for her. Like, I just thought the editing kept kind of interpolating her as one of the kids, like Russell would be doing something really terrifying and be like, the son is scared, and the baby is scared, and the wife is scared, and the little girl is scared. Like, and we all were laughing when we left about how, I know that in the reviews we are told what her name is, but I'm pretty, does the movie just not tell us, or is it just impossible to recapture? Because we had a contest afterward to name Noah's wife, and my friend John kept calling her Betty Draper.
It was something like, it was some version of Naomi, right?
It's Nama, but I...
It's what? I'm sorry?
It's Nama, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think they say it once, but, like, they repeat the other names a billion...
1,000 times, right?
Like, the most impossible to say name.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And played by Samantha Morton. Like, yeah, ham, shem, shem, and then she would just be there, like, nursing. And kind of looking... And that amazing line where she's like, you know, we hear all the people shrieking outside for their lives. And he's like, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have done this. She's like, all I see is how hard this has been for you, honey. It's like, wow. Like, this is pretty intense. I mean, I know you hired her as the Russell Whisperer. Like, she knows how to handle this. She's been here before. But let her do something. I don't know. And then, you know, she gets to yell. But...
And she gets to make false threats about how violently she'll protect her children.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like, that's such a, like, tease, basically, because she really does the least of anybody when push comes to shove about it.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like he kind of realized that he'd sidelined her in this way, because he then hands Emma Watson basically the film's ending. Like, she has the final monologue, and she's the person kind of telling Noah how it's going to get better and how the world is going to recover itself, kind of in, like, the voice of God, almost. So that was really... impressed by Emma Watson, even though she does spend a lot of time doing what Jennifer Connelly does, which is cowering in fear of Russell Crowe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so basically it's a documentary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even when he's naked and laying on an Icelandic beach, he just scares the shit out of everybody else.
Please don't invent the phone and throw it at me.
And then she kind of really does a lot with it near the end when she gets huge, big melodrama scenes, and she sells them, and then also she sells kind of the shell-shockness after, which I thought was really impressive. And I wish that there had been room for both of them to do it, but I'm glad at least Emma Watson got that time.
She's gotten a lot more tools in her arsenal than I expected her to get at this point in her career.
Yes, yes.
Like, she's proven she can do a good few different things between this and Bling Ring and... being a wallflower. Like, those are three very different parts, and I think she's been great in all of them.
Yeah, I still have. I wish so much I could feel how others feel about her, but I still have...
We need to lacuna Harry Potter out of your brain, Nathaniel.
I know, I still have such issues with her acting. Like, I like her. I agree that she's shown way more range than I was expecting to see, and I thought she was really good in Perks of Being a Wallflower. But... I just, every time she acts, I can hear her, you know, saying a line, like, her face, like, I can hear her face getting ready to say the line, like, I don't know how to describe it, it just always feels so rehearsed to me.
Yeah, I felt that way in this movie a little bit, too, about her, but I agree with all of you that, like, it's I don't know, I guess it's not that dissimilar from how I felt about the movie in general. Like, I totally am into the ambition, and, like, I think it's cool that this is the kind of stuff she's putting herself up for.
Mm-hmm.
Execution just felt like a problem.
Yeah. So the other movie we were going to discuss, because it's so appropriate for Easter, is Under the Skin.
Yeah.
I did not volunteer this information on the thread, but I still haven't seen it, so... You guys, please.
Or maybe you can ask us questions again. Yeah, well, we could do that old trick.
I want to be shown the light of ScarJo, so please inform me.
I'm not sure that this is the movie to do that, though.
Oh, no.
No, I mean, I love it, but I'm not sure it's much more of a director's movie than an actor's movie.
Yeah.
But she, I feel like, has shown especially in the last year or so, like, she's a really good... director's actress.
Oh, yes. Total vessel.
Like, she's really, really... And I think she's really great in this. And I think this movie, more than anything else, is visual storytelling.
That's what I was
going
to say.
Like, 101. Like, it's really, really remarkable how much you end up understanding. Like, it's not one of those movies that doesn't tell you much and you're left to, like, connect as many dots as you can, like an Upstream Color or something like that. Like, this movie doesn't tell you hardly anything, and yet you understand everything that's going on purely through visual cues, and it's really remarkably done in that way. And I think she ends up putting forth a lot of the story on her face and in her reactions and in her sort of curiosity and in her sort of, like, slowly learning fear. Like, it's really, I don't know. Like, I feel like she and Glazer are really in sync on this one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was actually going to lead with that too about the visual storytelling, but what I thought was interesting is I saw it with my best friend, and we had different interpretations of what had happened, but neither of us felt that it was hard to interpret.
Right.
Which, what were you know, is right to your point of it, right?
Yeah. Well, what were your opposite takes?
Well, I forget which plot detail we were completely different on, but I had this, you know, very elaborate, like, story in my head of what was happening with the men in the movie, which you don't, like, if you've heard about the movie, which is about, you know, Scarlett Johansson being an alien and, you know, picking up men in Scotland, which is basically all people said about the movie mm-hmm. before, I wasn't aware there was going to be other characters related to her. I thought it was kind of like a solo film.
Right.
And so I don't know how spoilery we should get with this one. I guess we'll have to get spoilery.
Don't worry about me. I willingly accept spoilers.
So, but anyway, the initially the man she's dealing with, and then later the men, who are on the motorcycles.
Oh yeah.
We, like, my friend and I had completely different reads on what was going on there. I wish I could remember the exact thing he thought, but I viewed it as they were being created while the plot was going on.
And so, that's interesting.
And so that if you could take off their helmets, which they don't take off, spoiler alert, they would actually be those men. They would look exactly like those men.
Oh.
See, was picking up.
I thought they were, like, watchers and, like, cleanup crew.
Well, yes, but I also thought, because there's a shot of the first woman that's killed in the movie that
uh-huh.
I thought was a shot of Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, interesting.
And so maybe I just misinterpreted that, but I thought, oh, she took that person's skin.
Gotcha. That's supportable. I feel like that makes sense.
So anyway,
that's kind of what I remember too.
Right. My friend did not view it at all as, like, this is what the purpose of this was, that they were becoming more of them, you know?
Right.
Multiplying. Right. He didn't get that at all. He thought it was more like what you were saying, Joe, where they were just, like, her security team, basically.
Yeah. And it seemed, her mission seemed like a research quest to me. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's because so much of the story was her sort of, the small ways in which she ends up becoming more like humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, it's, I knew this would happen because of Birth, but, like, it's one of those movies where, like, the more you talk about it and think about it afterwards, the better it gets.
Yeah.
You know, because it is very much, like, I found it very hypnotic, but not, I wasn't really, like, thinking about themes or anything. I was just sort of absorbing the visuals and my interpretation of the story.
Right.
And then after
that sounds.
Then after I left the theater, I started thinking about all the other things you're thinking about, Joe. Like, for example, with, like, the fear and, like, what exactly, which pieces exactly she was not acclimating well to about the Earth.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really interesting thing. Like, I love her reaction to sort of environmental things, like weather.
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating.
Well, and the way the mood really turns on a dime from anytime it's just her and someone else, you're afraid for them. And then the second anybody else is introduced to her environment, you're afraid for her.
Right.
Like, even, like, that crowd of, like, chicks go into the club.
Yeah.
like, they turn the corner and you're just like, oh shit, she's in trouble. And it's just like, it's only because, like, she's not in control of that situation anymore. And I don't know, I really liked that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that scene was great, and I love how she was trying to get out of that scene until she found a way to get back into the scene that she's accustomed to playing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was very interesting to watch. It was very, like, there was always something for you to really latch on to, almost entirely visually.
And Nick, you've been quiet.
You've been Gabby.
Sorry.
I guess I would... I think just at the level of, like, constructing sequences that you're not going to forget, he's just been so good at that in every movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like that bank robbery in Sexy Beast, which I've never gone back and watched that movie again, but, like, I still feel like I saw it 3 weeks ago or something. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think it's, like, to pull these movies together, maybe, like, the sequence on the beach with the baby.
Oh, God, it was terrifying.
It was totally terrifying, and not in a, like, here's the shot where I have the blade of a knife 3 centimeters right from the face of a baby, like in Noah. And I think that the... just the ways of evoking total menace and making sure you're thinking about, like, both movies want you to think about ideas more than exactly, maybe exactly what you're looking at, right? But I think it's just amazing that he's able to do that without kind of relying on obvious sort of triggers that's going to, you know, that shot or that sound mm-hmm. or that image is what's going to make the audience feel this way. Like, if you hold a knife over a baby's face, I'm probably going to be worried for the baby, but also a little bit annoyed that you couldn't think of something else to do.
Yeah.
And I think that sequence is just unbelievable. And, like, her own impassivity.
Right, yes.
Like, that it does not go for the, like, you know, she's automatically fearful for the baby. It's also not clear she's hoping that this will play out the way it does. Like, it's just, it's so enigmatic. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, her impassivity in that scene was really incredible because it was like you were processing the information with her.
Yeah.
And because he doesn't give you more information than she has, which I thought was very smart.
Yeah.
You don't actually understand what's happening at first.
Yeah.
It's not that you don't understand their actions, you just don't even understand what's happening.
You don't understand the intent, or, like, the extent to which her intention goes.
Right.
Right.
What I love about this movie is that, like, danger exists beyond her. Mm-hmm. She sort of exacerbates danger sometimes, or takes it in a different way, or takes it further. But, like, there are situations that she encounters and then sometimes leaves where, like, the world is fucked up and random and awful anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was really, like, interesting too, where it's not so easy as just sort of, like, this alien comes along and fucks shit up.
Right. Which I was constantly fearful that it would descend into.
Yeah.
Especially toward the end when it started getting... when she started being less in control of situations.
Yeah.
Because I thought she was gonna, you know, freak out on people with her alien ways, which is not really how it happened.
Right.
You guys are making it sound like Species was a bad movie. I think it wouldn't maybe kill the movie to be a little bit clearer about, like, the sheer nature of what's going on occasionally. Like, the way of, like, whatever she's leading them back to and whatever the process is that's happening that gets figured in the way that it does with the Black Lake and the, you know, whatever. Especially since, like, the film's built on a series of repetitions, which, like, you know, really works. Like, I thought at some point maybe it was just, like, stinginess on my part that I was just curious to learn a little bit more about how we ought to frame this. And occasionally I think, like, with anybody who, like, builds their films in terms of, like, discrete set piece sequences, something like the disfigured fellow can feel a little bit literal for a while. But
yeah, I get that. Just,
the movie's so productive of responses, and, like, the dynamics about what happens at the end are just so complicated and really affecting in a way that I wasn't necessarily anticipating. And I think, like, I miss Katie, so I keep trying to pull it back to Noah, but
I'm here.
But I felt like again, like, both movies kind of really, really, really want to be think pieces, and I admire that about both of them. And in a way, I think it's probably even harder to pull that off when you're trying to make a think piece for $130 million for a big studio.
Yeah.
But it just seems like Noah, to me, had a lot of stuff in it that was not really going to serve the thought experiments it was trying to prompt.
Right.
It's a lot of time to spend with Anthony Hopkins. It's a lot of time to watch sort of a battle scene like we've seen lots of times to kind of keep us on point. And weirdly, at the expense of things like how Noah goes from those very obscure visions he has to his incredibly intense feeling about how to build the Ark. And in fact, the Ark's kind of like built within a cut or so. It just seemed like what you guys are saying about her understanding of her own mission and then watching as she like starts to, as feelings start to set in, could have been in Noah's kind of repertoire. But I just felt like we kept being given a lot of stuff to react to in kind of generic ways.
Well, maybe that's what the instance was actually for. So like when the think piece parts come up, the action audience can doze off for a few minutes.
Docile. Like, yeah, I think both movies get even more interesting the further away you get from them. But in my experience, just for myself, like for Noah, it's almost because what was happening on the screen didn't often feel like it was serving the thematic conversation all that well. And I just thought it looked a little bit tacky, especially for somebody who managed to make The Fountain for nothing and it looked gorgeous. I thought this movie looked a little tacky. But although I do like all their knitwear and the amazing denims of the future past or wherever.
Oh my God, the bags and the hair.
Watching her invent top stitching was cool. But and in Under the Skin, like you just as every single thing is happening, it happens in a way that you're interacting with the movie and thinking the same things she is or not, or going back and forth, which I thought was more impressive.
Yeah, do you guys do you have any like feelings about whether not just you were saying it could stand to give a little more information about the process that's happening when she brings the men back to her place, but do you guys think it could have been clearer on plot points, or did you like how sharp the ending of scenes was? Because I'll give you an example. When she picks up the deformed man,
yeah,
when, you know, through a long scene, she frees him, you know, doesn't go through with what she usually goes through with.
Yeah.
And then he's wandering naked through this field and he goes in somebody's backyard and there's this very, very quick cut.
Yes. Yeah, very quick.
Where you almost don't register that he's entering the yard at the same time this other person's entering the yard.
Uh-huh.
And then it's over. And, like, I understood what was happening, but I don't know if my friend was looking at the wrong part of the screen or whatever, but that's the only part that completely lost him.
Huh.
Because he was like, what just happened? So did you like the editing?
I mean, I'll vote for a movie that that errs on the side of telling you little over a movie that tells you way too much.
Yeah.
Like, any time. So... sure. Yeah. I mean, like, I saw it, like, in September, so, like, I don't remember it as clearly as you guys do, but, so I can't remember, I guess, exactly what my reaction to to that was, but since it was so clearly built as a series of provocations, and I thought those kind of abrupt endings or sometimes abrupt beginnings of scenes kept provoking, yeah. And it wasn't like the movie was hiding from... Like, sometimes that only feels a little bit fishy when, like, you feel like the movie actually doesn't have it up its sleeve to be able to construct a sequence that's internally coherent or has a rhythm. Like, that's just when it feels like bad editing. And this, it felt like there were pretty clear choices about when it wanted to be obscure and when it was letting things play out. So I don't think it... I don't remember it bothering me.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like there were, like, logistical things that I probably understood the least of, like, how... the one guy was, the motorcycle guy was able to anticipate whatever. But I think it was at least very clear in terms of the big picture of like what was happening in terms of the larger story, which is what I was fine with. So,
yeah. So the fact that we're pairing them in this podcast makes me desperate to know what Noah would have made of Under the Skin. Because,
Noah the person?
Yes, because he interprets his dreams so emphatically.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the things I liked best about Noah, is that you really could take it as just this guy who's really terrible about interpreting his own dreams.
Right. Which is fair enough, because his dreams are not so easy, even when you know what they mean.
Like, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, the dream sequences I really loved in Noah, actually. And I love that that was the way that sort of prophecy and God's communication, because that is very provocative.
Yeah.
Because there was no voice of God or whatever. And the other thing I thought was really odd about the relationships in the movie was that everyone sort of, you know, cowered in fear to Noah, but also viewed him as the only one who could receive communication.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, obviously Methuselah has tons of God power.
Yeah.
So why weren't his decisions treated with respect?
He's just crazy for those berries, man.
Give him a crunch berry.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff in Noah and in the Bible, too, where it's just sort of like, well, because.
Right.
Yeah. Well, like, people live for 800 years
Is there anything else in the movie that sort of edges into camp in the way that Anthony Hopkins' performance does? I mean, it sort of stuck out to me for that, but if you're trying to disqualify a character that there's no logical reason to disqualify, that would be one way out, right? To just have him seem slightly stoogy, even though mm-hmm. he's also, you know, not only worth listening to, but if you've got a fertility problem, go
here's see your guy.
Yeah. My favorite moment in the movie is the reaction shot on Emma Watson and Shem when they come back from the fields and they're trying to leave on the ark. They're like, have you seen Ham? They're like, no.
Oh, I know, right. Oh, right.
They both just look so
bad.
Riding in cars with boys. It's so
yeah.
Were we going to talk about Grand Budapest too, or?
We could briefly.
I
will just throw this out there. I didn't really like it that much. And I feel sort of sheepish to say that because people are so enthused about it.
I was there about Moon Knight's Kingdom. It's okay, you'll get through it.
Yeah, I just felt really... I felt really outside of the movie the whole time.
And I hate to not be able to participate in a Wes Anderson love fest because I generally... One of my favorites, generally.
Yeah,
you
no.
invented the Wes Anderson love fest.
No, well, maybe not that. But like, no, I like when other people come around to directors that I love, because there was a while there where he was sort of a punchline for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Around Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah, which mm-hmm. I still really like. This, I never quite could latch on to, beyond the fact that I thought Ralph Fiennes is very good in it. It doesn't seem to cohere as well as the other ones. This movie made me really, really think about like every cast member in their isolation booth in a way that that most of his other movies don't make me feel like, even if they maybe are.
Mm-hmm.
There was a, and I guess this is sort of a weak criticism, I guess, but there was a mean streak in this movie that I didn't quite feel fits the style as well.
Mean toward who, do you think?
Towards everything.
Well,
like,
toward the cat.
Oh, yeah. The cat, that's a tough moment.
I don't know. There's just a nastiness to it. It's in the same way that I felt like there was a nastiness in For Your Consideration that wasn't present in the other Christopher Guest movies.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This maybe felt like Anderson was getting some aggression out in a way that I don't always love to watch.
There was something about the sadness of it, and I grant that's also mostly toward the end of it, so that's kind of what I walked out of it thinking of. But the whole idea of this lost continent and this lost era and all of these beautiful things that get turned into that brutal orange Soviet hotel, like the way that the set design tells the story of Europe in the 20th century and what happens to these characters is really, I mean, and we should expect that from Wes Anderson. His set design is always, you know, does so much. But I loved the way that it ended with this character, with this Ralph Fiennes character, who was already kind of out of time when he was living and who was really trying to hold on to something that was going away so much faster than anybody ever expected. And the fact that Wes Anderson kind of creates fake Nazis and sets them up in this world, I thought the tone is so tough. And it really worked for me the way that it was kind of fantastical and then swerved toward insane darkness and, you know, touches on reality enough to feel real without trivializing what actually happened. That's not an easy thing. And I don't think anyone's complained too much about the Nazis, so I'm guessing that part of it at least works for people.
Well, I mean, what you're saying makes complete sense to me, and I didn't dislike it. I just felt it was very... Well, I guess what other people have complained about his past films that I didn't feel, like, very... so, like, sealed off from me. Like, here's my little snow globe, and inside the snow globe is all of these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, but I want to be inside the movie.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're inside other Wes Anderson movies? In
yes.
Way?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like there are Wes Anderson movies that I've really loved that I also felt outside of. Like, they're Royal Tenenbaums has its own. I mean, there are things that are so relatable and so human and sad about that movie, but there are also things that are so arch and specific that there's kind of an inside-outside thing that I really admire. And because what Grand Budapest is kind of an outsider's perspective on Europe, like, you sense kind of Wes Anderson as someone who didn't get to live in this world and wants to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that way of kind of trying to peer through the curtains of a fancy world, like the house that Tilda Swinton's character lives mm-hmm. in.
Well, I mean, I think that sort of friction is well chosen in a way for the subject matter here, because it's about a place, whereas some of his other films are not exactly about places, you know? Like, Royal Tenenbaums is about a family, but it's not about a specific location, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. though the locations are interesting, you know?
Yeah.
And, but the place here matters a lot more. And can we just say for a second how incredibly versatile Adam Stockhouse as a production designer is? Because he did 12 Years a Slave and this.
Yeah, that's really something.
Back to back.
Yeah.
No,
the production
God.
Design is gorgeous.
I did not realize that.
Yeah.
It's really, I mean, on par or better with anything else in Wes Anderson's filmography. I feel like the casting maybe has now become a problem, where it's just this series of, like, I don't know, like, the casting as a punchline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, there's Bill Murray, ah, ha, ha, ha. And it's just like, well, that's the whole bit. Mm-hmm. It's just like that this guy is Bill Murray, and the whole bit is that this guy is Edward Norton. Mm-hmm. And I don't know a way around it, because he so loves working with these people, and these people so love working with him. And I, you know, far be it from me to be like, no, don't have as much fun on your movie as you would like
to. Yeah, go work with people you hate.
Yeah. but I don't know. I felt like this maybe is I'm in that regard.
I kind of enjoyed the balance of when the celebrity cameos were driving the movie and when the, like, German inmates were driving. Like, I thought it split the time up a little more interestingly among faces that we recognized and didn't, especially compared to what I was expecting from the trailer. Like, they're just whole... Am I crazy? Like, were there... It seemed like there were, like, passages in the movie where it's basically Ralph Fiennes and people we don't know that well.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Harvey Keitel. Yeah.
And Harvey Keitel. I don't know. I liked that about it. I feel like I've just kind of come out the other side of some kind of like, yeah, I'll play with your dollhouse. Like, this is the only thing you do. Like, you know, when you have that friend who invites you over to play, and then, like, the eighth time you're like, do we always have to play this? Like, I don't want to always play this. And now I'm kind of like, look at you playing with dolls in ninth grade when we're supposed to not do that anymore. Like, you're rad. Like, I'm not totally into this, but, like, I respect this. And like, so I think my impatience climaxed around Darjeeling Limited in some way. And I guess, like you guys were saying.
Then you accepted him for what he was.
Now I've accepted him for what he is. And, like,
he was born this way.
And I do, yeah, he totally was born this way. And it's like Katie's saying, like, I do respect that I see him, like, seeing how much he can kind of flex that a little bit. Like, if, like, that style can be pushed to, like, comment on history or place, which I would not have anticipated from it necessarily,
mm-hmm.
That's at least kind of interesting. But I also did feel kind of outside it. And there are movies like The Life Aquatic that I think make much clearer that you're supposed to be outside this. Like, this is all remote.
Mm-hmm.
And this, maybe because Ralph Fiennes is so charming and completely ingratiating, like, I felt the push-pull of feeling kind of drawn in, but kind of not, sometimes. he is so great in this.
Yeah.
Can I do the obnoxious thing and say, do you guys think that he can get Oscar traction for this? Is anybody ready for that?
I wondered about that.
I thought about it while I was watching it, and I mean, he's so good in it, and he's so due for that kind of return to awards talk, because he was playing Voldemort for so long. I mean, and God love him, he made a fortune, and he can do whatever he wants, so
yeah,
that's fine.
He's also, like,
possible.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of wonder when Wes Anderson is going to have that moment with the Academy that David Fincher and David O. Russell and Darren Aronofsky had, where...
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have any time for them in the world, and now they like them.
Well, Moonrise Kingdom did, you know, it had its share of the conversation.
It almost made it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, all of his movies, they, if they get nominated, it's only ever for screenplay.
Yeah.
So, and which is insane. If you, like, we were talking about the production design in his movies, is always just such a triumph of imagination and theme and everything else, and they never... Like, the art directors don't care about his movies, which is so weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Jealousy.
Yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, it's... And, I don't know. People seem really enthused about this one, so... I'm not sure about the acting branch, but maybe this could get more visual traction than the other movies.
I mean, it has such a kind of emphasized lead in a way that his movies don't always...
Yes, that's true.
A lead who's being asked to do a whole bunch of stuff that he's not usually asked to do, nor is a Wes Anderson character asked to do, so...
And a lead who people are familiar with and who they... I mean, I assume people like Ralph Fiennes. It's been a while.
Yeah.
There's got to be a lot of goodwill left there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like no one has gotten more jacked over the years by the December 31st release than Ralph Fiennes. Like, he's
right.
Like, he's really good movies, like Coriolanus and Onyx and Invisible Woman, and then they always come out in the Death Valley period.
Yeah.
It's like you can't even tell that they opened and they barely get reviewed. So it would be so pleasing in so many ways. Also, since he was my first imaginary boyfriend. So I feel fondness for him.
From what performance?
From specifically the photo in Time magazine about Schindler's List performance, if you must know. But then, like, the whole quiz show Strange Days period, it was like, take it away.
Yeah.
Wait, I don't know what that means. I have to stop thinking about it. But it had already started happening.
I'm just alarmed by the idea of having a crush on Ralph Fiennes based on Schindler's List. But
that was difficult. A whole generation working through that with Michael Fassbender right now. Then I met Derek and he was like, no, Joseph Fiennes. I'm like, no, whoa. Incorrect.
Yeah, that was such a downgrade.
Yeah.
Those parents should be ashamed.
Imagine what their third child looks like.
Well, history sorted it out. We stuck with the right Fiennes, and it all worked out.
History arrives at the correct Fiennes.
I also
Noah interpreted his dreams.
Did we say anything about the Desplat score in this? Because I thought that was super fun, too.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I like... I mean, I like him in general. I think he works too much, but, like, whenever I listen to one of his scores, I'm always impressed, even if I didn't really think about it during the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I found after the fact that I really, really love the Philomena score.
Yeah, the Philomena score is really great. Although the fact that you don't think about it during the movie maybe says something about how his music should be used, but...
Again, there's no vocal cameo from the real Philomena Lee in it, so that's a problem. That's a miss. Well, that's a missed opportunity.
I mean, as far as we know.
Well, Desplat's Oscar, speaking of people who deserve to come back around, that's going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah.
And why not for this?
If it can hold up through all the fall stuff.
Yeah. They're making bunches of money.
That's true. So, since we haven't spoken in a while, anything else? Any other discoveries when we've been gone for a month that you wanted to share with everyone? Maybe
there's a bunch of stuff that's opened that I had seen previously in festivals that I'm hoping people have sought out or will seek out. I feel like...
Yeah. Let's play that game.
Because, like, Nick, you and I saw The Weeknd at the Chicago Film Festival.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. I feel like you did too, right?
Especially the two lead performances are great.
And
Jeff Goldblum's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. The best I've liked Jeff Goldblum in quite a while, even though he's still just being Jeff Goldblum. But I really loved it. And Lindsay Duncan and Jim Broadbent as the leads, as these two sort of long married, not entirely satisfied anymore people. I really liked it. And I hope it gets a little bit of attention. I feel like it's one of those movies with just a little boost of attention. It could be one of those things like, oh, you know, the best movie you missed from the first half of the year kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Hide Your Smiling Faces, I thought, was another one that had played Tribeca, and it also played Chicago, I believe, right?
Yep.
That I also thought was really good. This sort of kids in America kind of what they can get up to when left to their own devices, and there's danger, and there's it's sort of a darker coming of age, I would say. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But not like hit you over the head with a hammer darker, like just,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of the dangers of childhood in a fairly realistic sense. That I also really like. And Stranger by the Lake has opened, right? Like officially opened.
That was in January, yeah.
That was January, right? Yes, mm-hmm. And that's fantastic. And I feel like people have talked about that a good bit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, check those out, people.
Blue Ruin's about to come out, which is really good, like revenge suspense,
mm-hmm.
And directed incredibly. Did you have any of you guys seen that?
I haven't seen that.
No.
Been hearing people talk about it.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and not just for the completely unanticipatable Jan Brady cameo at the end when Eve Plum shows up as a homicidal, like, den mother.
Wow!
What? It's about a guy who is sort of a vagrant in his beachside community. I think he starts in Maryland. The plot has a trajectory into Virginia, and finds out that a murderer is getting out of jail that he obviously feels an intense connection to and is in some way related to why he's now a homeless vagrant. And so you come to find out pretty quickly, I guess I can say, that this guy killed his parents. And so even though he has no skills that would recommend him as a revenge assassin, decides he has to go after him. And it's not hokey, like it's not played for laughs, but in terms of like scene construction, like we were talking with Under the Skin, like there are just so many, some of them are quiet scenes and some are kind of ballistic scenes, but
yeah,
it's just so tight. And then mm-hmm. Ilo I think is about to come out, which was one of the foreign language film contenders last year from Singapore. That's an incredibly sweet sort of family comedy drama,
mm-hmm.
With five really great performances, including one from a kid. The Immigrant's going to open one day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
coming
it's
out May 2nd.
Is it theaters now?
No, May,
no, it's,
May
it's,
2nd.
I thought it was going to be only VOD, and now it's only theaters.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it comes out May 2nd. And also opening that day is, I haven't seen this one, but I've heard only really great things, is Ida from Poland.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
That comes out that day as well. So there's a lot of counter-programming stuff if you don't want to see the superhero movies.
You don't have to go see Amazing Spider-Man 2, I promise.
Yes.
Right.
We just got a trailer for Borgman, too, which I also really liked. And it's so unsettling and disturbing in this weird sort of middle European dark modern fairy tale kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And hilarious. And then,
yeah, darkly.
And not, yeah.
Yeah. And if you like movies about sexuality, as many readers do, the new Francois Ozon is out any second now, too. Young and Beautiful.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good. Like, it has its moments and definitely a lot to think about. It wasn't great, but if you're interested in, you know, sort of coming of age and sexuality movies, it's interesting.
And the Elaine Stritch documentary as well.
That has already come out. Like,
right, that's already out.
Yeah.
Again, if you're looking for studies of human sexuality.
Or grim revenge. Served cold.
Yeah. Whoever lasts the longest has the best revenge.
That's right.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us for this Easter edition.
Happy to be back.
Yes,
everybody.
And we'll be back to podcasting now.
Hopefully Darren Aronofsky will make a movie where the Easter Bunny is like a fundamentalist murderer who just wants to take everybody out.
Murder everyone over eggs.
That's right.
Didn't that movie, Donnie Darko, didn't Richard Kelly make that movie?
No, that was the scene in Inland Empire. That,
oh, right.
That was the origin of the Easter Bunny.
Yeah, but it's been, like, 8 years, which is obviously, like, we need to reboot it.
Right.
Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't wait till the new Argo. Woof.
Okay, thanks for joining us.